Okay, we're going to go ahead and get started because we're running a little bit behind. I want to introduce Mark Goodner. He's going to be going over juvenile records, specifically expunctions. Mark received his Juris Doctorate from the University of Texas School of Law. While in law school, he worked in the mediation clinic and was a finalist in the Thad T. Hutchinson Moot Court Competition, and served as the executive board on the executive board of Assault and Flattery, which I would really like to know what that means. He's currently the program attorney and deputy counsel for the TMCEC. If you could just give a warm welcome to Mark, and he's going to explain this to us.
Thank you, Luveda. Can everyone hear me okay? Okay. So, 30 seconds on what assault and flattery is. In a prior lifetime, my undergraduate degree was in theater, and I taught high school and middle school for 5 years before going to law school, and I was a theater director. Well, when I went back to school, to UT Law, there's an organization called Assault and Flattery, which is the oldest student organization in the law school, and every year for the past 50 or 60 years, they've put on a musical parody skewering current events, making fun of lawyers and judges and the law in general. So that was what our job was in law school. But thank you so much for welcoming me here. I am really excited to be in this room after sitting about 5 feet over, just on the other side of the wall, and hearing how much fun you've been having in comparison to the judges next door. I can tell there's a lot more energy over here. So I'm glad to be here, and I know you're awake because you just had Ryan talk to you for an hour. So we're going to move forward with juvenile records. So we have about an hour and 10 minutes to talk about these things, and we'll talk about expunctions, which is something that has been around for a long time, but it's always nice to kind of go over the procedures and the law regarding expunctions, and then these orders of non-disclosure are this new animal that we have to deal with that came about June 19th of 2009. So over a year old now, but it's still a new process to many of you, and we know that many courts are playing catch-up trying to get those done. So we'll talk about those. Let me ask, by a show of hands, how many of you in here have kids? Okay, just about everybody. Anybody still feel like you are a kid? Nobody? Okay, I see a couple. All right, well, how many of you can remember a time when you saw your kid do something stupid? All right? All of us? All right, I get to see, and stupid might be too strong a word. We know they do stupid things, but let's call them learning opportunities where they mess up and they learn and they get to move on, right? And every time they mess up, they get to leave that mistake in the past, right? It's part of our growing pains to mess up and get on the right path and leave our mess-ups behind. And that's usually how life works, but the problem with criminal records is that they follow us around. They follow us around for the rest of our lives. So the things we're talking about today allows these kids that only have, that may have messed up, to leave that mistake in the past and not be forever labeled as a criminal and have that follow them around. So we'll talk about the two ways that that happens. But I can think, I mean, I still do stupid things on a regular basis, but I can think of a lot of stupid things I did when I was a kid. And let me tell you a little bit of my juvenile credentials. I told you I was a teacher for 5 years, so I saw all sorts of kids there. I also have a 13-year-old daughter who's going into eighth grade this year, so please say a little prayer for me. You know, I've told her, I was like, I want you to be ready for eighth grade because I taught eighth grade girls, and seventh grade girls might be the sweetest creatures on the face of the earth, but eighth grade girls might be the most evil incarnation of humanity that's ever come around. And everything switches from being to trying to please the teacher and be nice to what's that girl wearing or what am I wearing or who's she talking to and all that. So I know that it can be complicated. But I can think of stupid things I did in school. One thing I did is the night before my school picture when I was in first grade, I gave myself a haircut. And that was obviously not very smart, but of course it was preserved forever on film because my method of cutting my hair was pulling it straight down and just snipping it. So I had like a field goal post right here on my forehead. And, you know, so people obviously knew about that, but nobody comes up to me anymore 30 years later and says, hey, you're the kid that gave himself a haircut. You know, I was able to leave those things in the past. It hasn't really followed me around. Another embarrassing story that I think I blocked out of my mind until I was preparing for this class is happened when I was in kindergarten. Maybe the kindergarten classrooms are still like this, but when you were in kindergarten, did you have a classroom that had the bathroom inside the classroom? Right, so you had this internal bathroom and I think it's because when you're 5 and 6 years old, time is of the essence when you're talking about going to the bathroom, right? So I tried to go into the bathroom, and I opened the door, and to my surprise and my classmates' horror, there was a young lady using the bathroom at that time, so of course I, you know, closed the door and went back to my learning center, whatever I was doing, but I didn't make it, and I wet my overalls. So I convinced myself that if I played it cool, nobody would notice. And then eventually my teacher, Ms. Rich, came up to me and said, Mark, would you like to go to the nurse? And I said, why? What's the problem? Is there a problem here? Not thinking that she couldn't see that I was completely drenched. But I was able to, and I forgot about that until I started thinking about foolish things I did when I was a child or embarrassing things. And that has left me, was left in the past. Nobody comes up to me anymore and says, I remember when you wet your pants in kindergarten. You know, how about we call you Soggy Goodner or anything? Nobody ever says anything like that. So that's what we're talking about. But in this instance, we're talking about mistakes that are criminal offenses that now we have a couple methods at our disposal to leave things in the past. All right, forgot to set this up. So things that you do when you're a kid might seem really cool, and then later with some objectivity, they become less cool. For instance, if you like to get in your underwear and hop in your laundry basket and pretend like you're flying an airplane, that seems pretty cool. It becomes dramatically less cool 10 years later when it's floating around on the internet for all to see. Now let me just, I want to clarify something. Despite any resemblance, that is not me, okay? That's some poor kid whose parents decided to take a picture and put it on the internet. And I gave it a shot, but I didn't fit in the laundry basket anymore. Okay, another example. What about, which is my second picture here? Okay. How many of you can remember seeing your child, or maybe this happened to you, get your head stuck in something? I think it only happens when you're about under 5 years of age. You can see the steps. They're like, I think I can fit my head through these slats in the stairs. I can. Oh, but I can't get it out. I can't get it out. And it's, panic sets in. Well, you can imagine how embarrassing it might be if it happened at school. With a chair, especially when it takes four school officials and a hacksaw to get you out. But at least they gave him a sucker right there. You can see he's got a sucker as well. One last example. You might have thought it was pretty cool if you're a big Spider-Man fan when you were a kid to paint your entire body like Spider-Man and walk around the house like you're Spider-Man. But it becomes less endearing maybe or embarrassing. It's a pretty cute picture, but this kid's probably embarrassed now. But expunctions and nondisclosure allow us to leave these things in the past. Let's talk real quickly about some numbers of juveniles in municipal court. In 2008, 321,669 juvenile cases filed in municipal courts alone. Okay, are we designed specifically to deal with juveniles? No, we have a much broader jurisdiction, right? But we see more juvenile cases than anybody else. 2009, similar, we had over 300,000 cases. If you add juvenile cases in justice courts, that's another 100,000. So you can see over 400,000 in our limited criminal courts of limited jurisdiction, juvenile courts justice courts and municipal courts, versus the juvenile courts specifically designed to handle these things, only see 40,000 to 50,000. So we're seeing 7-8 times as many people in our courts as the juvenile courts. So we have to be ready for them and know the procedures that we have to follow because we see more in municipal courts and justice courts than in all of the other courts combined. But it brings up the question of records. In the past, you treated juvenile records the same in municipal courts as any other record. If somebody gave you wanted to see some records of a juvenile, you had to give it to them. There wasn't a protection there. Now, we did have some unique ways to make those records disappear. and that's been around, expunction. But there's a time, there's a timeline on that. They have to wait a certain amount of time, and then it can go away. But now we have this new level of confidentiality, an order of non-disclosure. And we'll talk about that at length a little later on today. So the reason why it's important for us to be concerned with helping juveniles deal with their juvenile records can probably be reflected in the family code here. And the reason why we're looking at the family code, generally we're governed by the Code of Criminal Procedure. But over the last 10 or 15 years, so many things have been gradually moved out of the Juvenile Justice Code and the Family Code over to us in Chapter 45. They keep sending us more kids and dealing with more offenses. Just happened last year, they added public intoxication for us. Things keep moving over. So really, the Juvenile Justice Code is kind of a shell of what it used to be. And municipal courts are called the shadow juvenile courts because we mirror so many things. So it helps us to look at the purposes. And if you look at the purposes of the Juvenile Justice Code, some of them may make sense when you compare it with what the general public probably sees as our primary purpose. What do you think is the primary purpose of a criminal court? What's the primary purpose of that court in dealing with a criminal? Pardon? Okay, justice. We want to see that justice is done. And I think if you polled people on the street and say, why do we have criminal courts? They would probably say, well, we want to make sure that justice is done. We want to make sure that people are punished for their crimes. And so those are generally criminal purposes. And we can see that reflected in the family code here, to promote the concept of punishment for criminal acts. That makes sense. That's probably would apply to all of our defendants that we see. The second purpose, to provide treatment, training, and rehabilitation. Well, that goes beyond mere punishment, doesn't it? And that's why, what happens if an adult is convicted in municipal court? What's their punishment? A fine and court costs, right? And that's it. End of story. What happens if a 17-year-old kid is convicted of a minor alcohol offense? What's their punishment? They have fine and court costs, alcohol awareness class, alcohol-related community service. So we see things beyond mere punishment, beyond just a fine. We're trying to take the time to provide treatment, training, and rehabilitation. Okay, so we see that reflected in our court. And then to provide for the care, protection, and wholesome moral, mental, and physical development of children coming within its provisions. Can tie that into a lot of things we do. But probably what really hits the nail on the head when you're considering juvenile records is this last one. To remove, where appropriate, the taint of criminality from children committing certain unlawful acts. What does that mean, the taint of criminality? Something that follows them around, like a stain that's on them. Or how many of you had to read the Scarlet Letter when you were in high school or okay, and what happened to the lady in the Scarlet Letter? She committed a crime, adultery, right, and then what was her punishment? She had to wear the Scarlet Letter A on her clothing for the rest of her life. It followed her around. We want to remove those labels that a kid might get as a criminal so that they can move on and become a productive member of society. Give them a second chance. So the differences between expunction and orders of non-disclosure are these. They're not the same. They don't have the same effect. An expunction is going to destroy any record of the case, but an order of non-disclosure just limits the release of information. And we've dealt with expunctions for a long time, and non-disclosure is a new process. So you can think of expunction as completely wiping something away. It's destroyed, it's gone, it has now disappeared. Non-disclosure creates a VIP list of people that have access to the information. Okay. Yeah, we'll talk about that. Non-disclosure is going to apply to every conviction. And you're right, expunctions are limited into how many times they can get in trouble and still get things expunged. So that's true. Here, municipal and justice courts have the only true deferred under Texas law. And what that means is under our deferred disposition, there shouldn't be much of a record, of a state record of a deferred disposition. Whereas a deferred adjudication under other courts, like district courts, there's still going to be a report of an official deferred adjudication. And successful completion of deferred under Chapter 45 results in dismissal without report of conviction. Expunction requires that reports of conviction or arrest be destroyed and removed. Orders of nondisclosure restrict access to the reports of conviction. So if you had to explain to a child what expunction was, and you needed to use a visual and artistic representation of what an expunction is, here's your picture. It's an explosion destroying everything, and it's gone. It's wiped away, right? It's the Death Star blowing up in Star Wars. Things are gone. Now, if you had to show an artistic rendition of nondisclosure, it's going to look more like this. It doesn't destroy it. You just sweep it under the rug, and it's hidden from everyone except those people that are on the list that know that they can lift up the corner of the carpet and see all the dirty secrets. So that's the difference. Nondisclosure, it's still there. Nondisclosure, or expunction, it's gone. So let's go back to expunction. Now, Chapter 55 expunctions I'm going to cover really quickly because they don't originate in municipal court. These are something they would have to go through a county or district court for, and we're going to talk about four specific expunctions today that originate in municipal courts. But the general authority for expunction is in Chapter 55. It's not available when the defendant has been convicted. And I want to go over this because it shows you the expunction is really a flip-flop from Chapter 55 to ours, because in Chapter 55, if they're convicted, there's no expunction. For almost all of our expunctions, you have to be convicted in order to get it. And it's available only to a person who has been arrested and acquitted, or there's no indictment or information filed, or the case was dismissed after a charging instrument was filed, or they were pardoned by the governor. That's how they can get it. And they can get a Chapter 55 expunction for something that happened in municipal court, but it doesn't originate in municipal court. You don't have to worry about it. They have to go to district court and take care of it there. 55 expunctions remove arrest or jail custody reports as well as court records. They have to be filed in the district court where the felony was heard, or county of the misdemeanor trial court where the trial happened for the case. And it's not available after deferred adjudication. And it's available regardless of age. All of ours are based on age. So we're talking about juvenile records, and all of these expunctions pertain specifically to either children or minors. Okay, so these are the four expunctions related to age. These all originate in municipal court. First of all, we have a general expunction. The general expunction is for children that are convicted or dismissed after deferred disposition of fine-only offenses, and that's found in the Code of Criminal Procedure 45.0216. And then we have a failure to attend school expunction, offenses involving minors and alcohol under the Alcoholic Beverage Code, and then Health and Safety Code tobacco cases. All right, so four different procedures. We have a general one, and then we have failure to attend school, alcohol, and tobacco all have their own expunction provisions. All of these are available to status offenders. Those are those age-related offenses, which you probably saw class on last year and have heard about. A status offense is something that's a crime for a certain class of people, but not a crime for everyone. And what we're talking about here is it's a crime for kids because of their age, right? So what's an example of a status offense? Curfew, right. And what about from the expunctions we just looked at? Alcohol, tobacco, all of those, right? It's okay for us to smoke or drink because we're adults. Kids, the legislature has decided that maybe they're not quite ready to handle that yet, so it's illegal for them. I had an interesting interaction with a cousin of mine last year. She was 10 years old at the time. Maybe she was 11. Anyway, last summer, and this really kind of illuminated to me why we need to have different rules for kids versus adults. Because they kind of operate on a different plane of thought, and they just don't have the same experience as us. But last year there was a death in the family, and at the funeral, family came from all over the country and was in one place, and it kind of turned into a family reunion experience. So there's a bunch of young kids around, 10 or 12 kids, and one day I went to the store with another adult, and we bought all sorts of 12 packs of sodas and fruit punch and all this stuff so that the kids would have, you know, snacks and drinks and stuff. We came back and we called the kids in and we said, all right, kids, here's all the drinks, you know, have fun, drink whatever you want. One rule, there's this one 12-pack over here of caffeine-free Diet Coke. Okay, and at the time my wife was 8 months pregnant. She wasn't feeling very well. I said, so you guys can just please don't drink that caffeine-free Diet Coke because that's Jen's special drink. It's the only thing that makes her stomach feel better and makes her feel better when she's pregnant. There's no caffeine in it, and it's okay. So please don't drink that. Drink everything else. Okay. The kids agreed. Later, a few minutes later, half hour later, I see my cousin Claire, who's 10 years old, walking around drinking a caffeine-free Diet Coke. I said, Claire, you know you're not supposed to drink a caffeine-free Diet Coke. Those are Jen's special drinks. She said, no, I didn't know. And she didn't. She wasn't there. I said, that's okay. I mean, that's just one, but please just leave the rest. Go ahead and finish it. But just know that that's Jen's special pregnancy drink, and please don't drink anymore. She said, okay. Then she got a real worried look on her face, and she said, it's not going to make me pregnant, is it? I said, no, it's not going to make you pregnant, but you can talk to your parents about that. So that just, they don't have the same level of experience and knowledge that we do, so it makes sense. We want to make some things off limits, and we also want to have an element of forgiveness for the mess-ups that they have. So first, let's talk about this general expunction provision. Anybody remember these guys? What's their names? Okay, so I hear Spanky. What's that, Stymie, is that his name over there? But those are the little rascals, Alfalfa. Is Alfalfa in there? I don't see y'all. Yeah, so the little rascals, so we're talking about general expunction provisions. These are going to apply to your general no-gooders. And as a father and a teacher, I can tell you, and you probably have the same experience, if you ever see a kid with that look on their face, something bad has just happened, or maybe it's about to happen. And if you ever see a group of kids like that with that look on their face, you're in real trouble. Okay, general expunction. It's available to a child as defined under 5102 of the Family Code. And that means we're talking about they have to be under the age of 17. According to the Family Code, once they're 17, they're an adult. Okay? And they have to be at least 10. So we're really talking about 10 through 16. That's the age that we see the kids, and that's what we're talking about, a child. It's available after they attain the age of 17. Why do we want to make them wait until they're 17 before we expunge something? So they don't think it's okay to do it again. Exactly right. And because, the next thing here, at the bottom, it applies to a person convicted of not more than one offense. And this one also permits expunction after deferred disposition. But we're making them wait until they're 17 because that's the age of majority, right? They become an adult. And we want to make sure they've only been convicted once. So we don't want to expunge something at 15 and then them have another offense or two after that. We don't want them to think it's okay. And you can this kind of dangles a carrot in front of them. If you don't mess up again and you get to age 17, you can get this expunged and it's going to be off your record. Okay? So yeah, we want to make sure that they don't think it's okay, and we want to make sure they only have one. Now this is different here. You can use general expunction under deferred or teen court. This is the only expunction out of the four we're talking about that is available after anything but conviction. All of the other ones have to be based on conviction. This one is available after deferred or teen court. Now, interesting thing to point out here. It says that not more than one offense described by 807, A4, or A5. So if you look at A4 or A5, oh, I'm sorry, I skipped over this one. So this general one applies to fine-only offenses and city ordinances. It includes public intoxication. It does not apply to the Alcoholic Beverage Code, tobacco cases, or failure to attend school cases. Why doesn't it apply to those three? They have their own. They have a specific expunction. So it's covered by another expunction statute. They can't use the general one, okay? The last one, it doesn't apply to traffic offenses. Now, this is the majority opinion, but it's a little bit confusing, so I'll try to explain it. You could make an argument that it does, but the vast majority of courts say that it does not apply, and this is the reasoning. When you look at not more than one conviction under 807, A4, or 5, this is what it says. A4 and A5, a person may not be prosecuted for any offense committed younger than 15 except for a misdemeanor punishable by fine only or a violation of a penal ordinance of a political subdivision. So we're talking about fine-only misdemeanors and local ordinances. Is a traffic offense a fine-only misdemeanor? Yes. So if you just look at A4 and A5, you would be led to think, of course this applies to traffic, because traffic is going to be a misdemeanor punishable by fine only or a traffic-related ordinance. It's covered by A4 or 5. But if you can't read A4 and A5 without looking at A1, 2, and 3 first. That's the key. 1, 2, and 3, first one covers perjury. We're not worried about that. But we're looking at 2 and 3. 2, a violation of a penal statute cognizable under Chapter 729 of the Transportation Code, so state traffic offenses. And then 3, a violation of a motor vehicle traffic ordinance. So the reasoning is because traffic lives in A2 and 3, it can't exist in A4 and A5. But if you just looked at A4 and A5 itself, you would be led to believe that it's included. That's the reasoning why the majority belief is that it doesn't apply to traffic, this general expunction. And really, why people believe it is because there's this guy that's like the juvenile law guru named Bob Dawson, who literally wrote the book on dealing with juveniles in Texas. And he was a professor at UT Law, and he's now since passed away. So nobody argued with him when he's alive, and they're still not going to argue with him now that he's dead, I think. So that's the majority holding. Okay, mandatory defendant notification. Anytime you see a child for one of these offenses covered by general expunction, you have to inform the person and any parent of their expunction rights, and you have to give them a copy. Now, I didn't go through everything that you have in your book, but you have a lot of materials in your book. I believe you have copies of the PowerPoint, and then is it before or after you have appendices with all of these statutes? You have expunction forms, non-disclosure forms, and you also should have an article that I just wrote for the Recorder, which isn't even published yet, in there about juvenile records. So you have to have a copy of this to be able to hand out every time you see them. Yes? The question is, if they have more than one, and under the Alcoholic Beverage Code, you can only get an expunction with one offense, one conviction. If they've utilized that one conviction, can they use some other method to get rid of that? And all of these, you're saying, can they use Chapter 55? Well, if they satisfy those Chapter 55 requirements, but generally, I mean, they're going to look at, it would have to fall under they were charged and then dismissed, or so it can't be a conviction. So there's still only one conviction. So they can be charged again and still get the expunction under municipal court for the one conviction, and then to get, if they go through a deferred or it's dismissed or something like that, they might be able to go to Chapter 55 to deal with that, but it's completely, right, you don't worry about it. Right, you're only worried about the ones that originate in your court. The expunction? Expunction has to be requested. It's no automatic. That's why you're telling them of their right. Because you might be seeing somebody when they're 11 years old, and you have to give them notice, but they can't get an expunction until they're 17. So, and then they would have to come back, petition the court. We'll go through that, pay a fee, and request who they want it sent to. We're still talking about the general expunction here. 450216 is a must. We'll get to the other ones. You have to tell them about the general. You have to tell them about failure to attend school. There's no requirement to tell them about alcohol and tobacco. I don't know why that is. I guess the legislature decided, you know what? We want to let you know if you steal a candy bar that you can get it expunged. If you skip school, we want to let you know you can get that expunged. If you smoke or you drink, you're on your own. I don't know why that requirement is not there. Doesn't mean you can't. And a lot of courts, to simplify this procedure, they have all four of these statutes on one piece of paper. So you know that anytime you see a juvenile, you give them that notice and they're covered for no matter what. Then you don't have to say, okay, you're here for alcohol. Okay, let me find the alcohol form or tobacco form or whatever. Or the general one, you just give it to them, and I mean, there's nothing wrong with informing people. Okay, so that was the general expunction. Any other questions about general expunction? Now we'll talk about these specific ones. Failure to attend school. We know kids don't generally like to go to school, like these young gentlemen right here. But this is under Article 45.055. So the expunction procedures in the Code of Criminal Procedure. The failure to attend school charge is in the education code. Okay, so this applies only to failure to attend school offenses under the education code. And this for this one, they have to wait until they're 18. So why is the age different here? Why do they have to wait until they're 18? Because that's the age required for them to still go to school. The general requirement is for compulsory school attendance is up to age 18. Now, there are exceptions all over the place for that. If they are 18 and they're still in school, they're required to complete that year. But the general rule, it's available when they turn 18. You can expunge them without a hearing. That says that specifically. And only on a finding that they have not been convicted of another failure to attend school offense under this code prior to reaching the age of 18. So the other one said not more than one offense under Penal Code A4 or A5. And this one says not more than one failure to attend school offense. And it's not available after deferred. So you'll notice, what happens if a kid stole a candy bar and has a penal code theft conviction, and they have a failure to attend school conviction? Can they get the theft expunged? Yes, because they only have one conviction under that category for the general expunction. And can they get the failure to attend school expunged? Yes, because it's only one there. So the lesson for the troublemakers out there is if they have a diverse criminal portfolio, they're going to be better off than if they're habitual offenders. So some kid that gets in trouble for drinking three times is going to be a lot worse shape than a kid that, I haven't been caught three times, but I got caught once for drinking, once for smoking, skipped school, and I stole something. He can get all those taken away. Okay. Mandatory notification, again, under the failure to attend school. You have to inform the person, any parent, and provide them with a copy of it. Okay, so let's move on to kids and drinking. Let me qualify this. That's not my child. I also didn't encourage this picture to be taken. I simply found it on the internet, and I hope it's a joke. I don't encourage kids to drink, but we know in municipal court, no matter, it doesn't stop them from trying, right? We see kids that try to drink a lot. So they have their own expunction here, alcohol expunction. So this applies to all of the Chapter 106 Alcoholic Beverage Code offenses. What are we talking about here in Chapter 106 Alcoholic Beverage Code? Consumption, minor in possession, attempt to purchase, providing false ID, all that stuff is going to be there. Basically everything you see a kid for here will be covered by Alcoholic Beverage Code. Applies only to offenses under the Alcoholic Beverage Code. They have to reach the age of 21. And we know that's because 21 is the age of majority, right? That's when we know that they can't get charged with any more of these. They have to be convicted of only one offense and not more under this code prior to reaching 21, and it's not available after deferred. So general is available after deferred. And now we know failure to attend school is not alcoholic beverage code offenses, cannot be expunged after deferred. Question? Nope. They have to allege that they have not been convicted more than once. So once they hit 21, they have to say, I've only been convicted one time. They can't say, I've been convicted four times, can you take one off? But they only get it if it's one. And there's no mandatory notification here. Smoking and drinking, No mandatory notification. Not sure why. Okay, kids and smoking. Again, not my kid. But, and hopefully this guy's double dipping too. He could be under either code. Okay, health and safety code. This applies only to tobacco offenses under the health and safety code. They have to complete tobacco awareness course. Okay? And there's no age requirement. This one is the one that's really different. You don't have to wait until they're 18. They can do it at any age, but they just have to get that tobacco awareness. And they can do it unlimited times. For some reason, we'll allow kids to get caught smoking, take a class, get it expunged, get caught again, get it expunged. They can do it over and over and over. We'll take $30 every time if they want to do that. Not sure, maybe it's tobacco lobbyist. I don't know why this is this way. But they can get it done unlimited times, but not available after deferred disposition. And the court does not need to inform them of the expunction right. So no mandatory notification here either. Effective expunction. If you look back to Chapter 55 for what it means, the part that I bolded here is probably the reason why many kids want to get it done. The person arrested may deny the occurrence of the arrest and the existence of the expunction order. So that means if they're applying for college, or they're trying to get a job, or they're trying to join the military, on those applications, they can deny that they ever were arrested. They can deny that there was an expunction order listed. Pretend like it never happened. It's been wiped away. Now, 3 does say, when questioned under oath in a criminal proceeding about an expungement, they can state only that the matter in question has been expunged. So it gives them the right to not deny that this happened. One time earlier this year, I had a clerk come up to me in Lubbock and say, "So you're telling me after this expunction or an order of non-disclosure that the kid can honestly say that they've never been convicted?" I said, "No, I'm not saying they can honestly say it. I'm saying they can legally say it." All right, this is something that they can legally do, but they have to be guided by their own conscience, because I'm sure that there are some entities that are really good at doing background checks, that have ways of finding out, and it could be a problem if they lie about it. But they do have the ability to do that. Okay, expunction procedures. The person has to make a written request, so they file a motion with the court. They have to be made after the date of majority, except that tobacco offense. They have to be a verified sworn motion. And other than tobacco, they have to make an oath that they have not, while under the appropriate age, have been convicted of more than one offense that they are seeking to have expunged. So, and based on that sworn statement, the expunctions can be completed, okay? Well, you don't. And some courts might do a little bit more follow-up to see if they can find anything else, but you're relying on their sworn statement. And if they're lying about it and you expunge it, yeah, they're gaming the system, but now you can charge them with a much more serious criminal offense. They've committed perjury. Arguably, they filed a false document with the court. I mean, you know about all these types of crimes they've committed there, too. Yes? I think it was failure to attend school one that says you can do it without a hearing. That's the only mention of the hearing, so you could presume that because the other ones don't say that you can do it without a hearing, that a hearing is required. It doesn't really say what the hearing has to look like. So I think if they move in, they could see the court and say, "All right, we're going to have our hearing right now. And you swear that you've only done one?" "Yes, I have done." So I think that it's probably good to have a quote-unquote hearing, but there's not anything laid out as exactly what that needs to look like. Order and notification. The person making the request has to pay $30. The judge makes specific findings. They sign the order. What the heck is that? Are the angels coming? I didn't die up here, did I? Okay. Judge must sign the written order of expunction. The order must require that the conviction, together with all the complaints, verdicts, sentences, and prosecutorial and law enforcement records, and any other documents, are expunged from the person's record. Okay? That's how it works. Pardon? Yeah, any record that you might have. So if you're a paper-free court, you got to do your best to try and get rid of those computer records. Okay, it's the duty of the court through the clerk to disseminate the order to all the courts, agencies, or entities that might have any information. And it's the duty of the person applying for this expunction to tell you who they want the orders to go to. But the clerk needs to disseminate the order. Must be sent to police agencies that may have arrest, detention, warrant information, as well as courts and prosecutors. Okay. All right, anything on expunction? Those were all things that we've been doing for a long time. We have a half hour left to conquer this new thing, orders of non-disclosure. Any questions on expunction before we move forward? For the four that we talked about, the expunction and the hearing happens at municipal court. Right. Only the Chapter 55 expunctions would be handled at a county court or district court. Orders of non-disclosure. So we're talking about sweeping these things under the rug. Here's the new law, 411.081F1. You can also think about this as the don't kiss and tell statute. Smart young gentlemen know that it's a good idea not to kiss and tell, unlike this guy who is clearly not keeping his affection for one girl a secret from... Does she look very happy right there? She looks a little bent out of shape, I think. Okay, Senate Bill 1056 brought this about. It added the subsection, and this is what it says. Criminal courts must immediately issue a non-disclosure order on conviction of a child for a misdemeanor offense punishable by fine only. Well, that sounds exactly like what we do, doesn't it? In our courts, people are convicted for fine only misdemeanors, and we see children. Okay, there's no limiting language as to what types of offenses we're talking about. We have jurisdiction over all of fine-only misdemeanors. So basically, anytime you see a child and they're convicted in your court, you're required to do an immediate order of non-disclosure. So, again, we'll go back to this definition of child, at least 10 and younger than 17. So I want to remind you, this is not going to apply to some of the minor status offenses that we talked about, like the alcohol code violations if it was committed by a 17 through 20-year-old, because they're adults. This is only for kids under 17. Became effective June 19th, 2009. So any conviction from that date forward immediately requires an order of non-disclosure. However, this protection is not just limited to those kids convicted after that date. Anybody that knows about this non-disclosure order, that it was convicted in the past, whether it be 3, 5, 10, 15, 20 years ago, can petition the court for non-disclosure. And if they petition the court, they are entitled to it automatically. But the burden is on them. And I don't think a lot of people know about this. Well, I think it's always safe to say consult an attorney because you never want to give legal advice. I think you can inform them of factual and maybe of laws, but without getting advice. It might be good to have just a handout to say juvenile records can be handled, you know, with expunctions, and juvenile record, you know, juvenile convictions are protected by orders of non-disclosure. I mean, I would keep it simple. Yeah, I think that might be okay. Okay, so 411.081, new procedure, and they wanted to more fairly mirror the protections that were in the juvenile code. So, often for the same act, the same crime, a kid can either be sent to municipal courts as a criminal case or to juvenile courts for what really is a civil matter. And if they went to the juvenile courts, their records were protected, it was confidential. But if they went to the municipal courts, they didn't have any protection of records. So they wanted to mirror those things. It didn't make sense that if a kid committed truancy and went to the juvenile court, that that would be protected, whereas truancy and failure to attend school are the exact same crime, the same actions. It's just called failure to attend school if it's filed with us, and truancy if it's filed elsewhere. So one place had protection and one place didn't. They're trying to make that more equitable to provide some parity there. So in the past, if you were a mother or a father and you had a 15-year-old daughter who was going out on a date for the first time with this kid, and you wanted to look up this kid's history, you could find out if they had been convicted in municipal court. You find out if he had a speeding conviction, if he, skipped school, or if he was convicted of petty theft, things like that. You couldn't find out if he was dealt with in juvenile courts for potentially more serious offenses. If he had been adjudicated for manslaughter or sexual assault, things like that, there's protection there. So now they leveled the playing field of protection at least, and they have that protection here in municipal courts too. Okay, order of non-disclosure applies only on conviction. And when we say on conviction, it really means just a conviction. So we're not talking about deferred, we're not talking about teen court or anything like that, because ultimately those result in what? A dismissal, so there's not a conviction. Now it gets tricky because we know a lot of times, especially you as clerks, know that for the purposes of court costs, everything's a conviction, right? You got a conviction's a conviction, a deferred is considered a conviction, all of those are convictions for the purposes of collecting court costs. But for non-disclosure orders, it has to be a conviction. If they're convicted, they're entitled to it. And it says, applies only on convictions for misdemeanor offenses punishable by fine only, which have not been referred to a juvenile court. So it has to be a conviction in your court. If it goes elsewhere, if you referred it somewhere else, you don't have to worry about the non-disclosure. And applies only in cases when conduct does not indicate a child in need of supervision. I don't know why this is included in there. It only makes it more confusing. But here's the general rule. If they are in municipal court and they're convicted in municipal court, it cannot be a conduct indicating a need for supervision. That's the term of juvenile court offenses, what would be the equivalent of misdemeanors there. So it doesn't become a CHINS or a conduct indicating need of supervision case until it's referred. And we'll talk a little bit more about that, but don't get hung up on that. A municipal or justice court should not enter an order of non-disclosure if they've been placed on deferred or they've successfully completed deferred or teen court or driving safety course. And the reason we just talked about, there's no conviction, so it's not triggered. Now, what if they're put on deferred and then they default and then they're convicted? Yes, then they do get it. And so some of this is going to be a matter of timing. Right when this was becoming law last summer, I got a call from Converse. Anybody here from Converse? Okay. Well, the call was from a clerk, and they said, I just have a question. There's an ugly divorce going on in our city, and the father has requested records of any of his three kids that we might have in municipal court. She said, I can't give them any of juvenile records. Isn't that right? And I said, no. Actually, juvenile records are treated just the same way as adults, unless somebody's been convicted since June 19th. I said, does anybody have a conviction after June 19th? And she said, well, two of the kids don't have anything at all, but the oldest boy is on deferred right now. I said, well, okay, he's on deferred. Is there any protection of his records when he's on deferred? No. So she would have to release all of those records. Now, if a week later the kid defaulted and then was convicted, and that request from the father came in a week later, then all of a sudden she couldn't send those records for after a conviction. So some of it's a matter of timing now. So it could be if somebody might be charged in your court, but you haven't had the case yet, they haven't been convicted, then their records aren't protected. But if the request comes in afterwards, you can't give them out. Some of this, there's are a lot of things about this that don't make sense, and we'll talk a lot about that. I think the goal behind this is really, it's a good idea, it's a noble idea to protect the kids, but it's not necessarily working right now as intended. And we'll talk about some of the problems. Conduct indicating a need for supervision. This is why you shouldn't worry about it too much. Conduct described under B1 does not constitute conduct indicating a need for supervision unless they've been referred to the juvenile court. Okay, so it's not CHINS. This is the only thing, and I hesitate even to tell you about this because it doesn't make any sense and we think it should just be disregarded for these limited purposes. A few years ago, they added this G to aid in the prosecution of failure to attend school cases in small counties. And it says, in a county with a population of less than 100,000, conduct described, CHINS conduct that violates failure to attend school is conduct indicating a need for supervision. So that sounds like failure to attend school is dealt with in municipal courts, and they're saying that that is CHINS. But for the purposes, if you held this to be true for non-disclosure, it would lead to an absurd result. Can you think of any reason why a kid convicted of failure to attend school in a population of 100,001 people should be protected, whereas a child who was convicted in a county of 90,000 people would not be? Doesn't make any sense for the purposes of non-disclosure, so I would not worry about that, but that is out there. So that might be something that would have to be dealt with when they fix this in future legislative sessions. Okay, traffic offenses. We've looked at the law, and it says it applies. You have to immediately issue these non-disclosure orders on conviction of a child for a fine-only misdemeanor. Is a traffic offense a fine-only misdemeanor? Yes, it is. So our position is that the clear language of the law says that it applies to all convictions. DPS has said that order of non-disclosure does not apply to traffic offenses. If so, you'd be entering a lot fewer of these orders. We feel differently, and we think the language says otherwise. Here's their argument, deconstructed, and there's a copy of their email in here. They say, under 411 point... Okay, criminal history record information. Order of non-disclosure prohibits the release of criminal history record information. And if you look at the definition of that, it says that criminal history record information does not include driving record information maintained by the department. So DPS says because a traffic conviction leads to a driving record and the driving record is excluded from criminal history record information, that you don't need to do an order of non-disclosure. Well, there's holes in that reasoning, and that's because first of all, are we the department, and do we maintain driving record information? Every record in municipal courts is a criminal record. It's all criminal history record information. Once it goes to DPS and they have it segregated, and they have their segregated driving record information, that order of non-disclosure that has been issued is not going to affect that driving record information, but it's still going to prohibit the disclosure for the courts, for the prosecutors, for the police. So our position is that it clearly does apply to traffic. There is some evidence that they didn't intend for it to, but the way that it's written, it does. So maybe they'll change that to make it clearly not apply to traffic, but as of right now, by the letter of the law, it does apply. And the reason why we say go ahead and treat it like it does apply to traffic is because we don't ever want the municipal courts to be the one that drops the ball. We know there's problems here, but if somebody wants to drop the ball, let it be DPS or somebody else. And I want to make you aware of this, not to send any waves of panic, but there is a criminal offense associated with the unauthorized release of information that's been ordered non-disclosed. And it's a Class B misdemeanor or a felony of the second degree. And you know that our fine-only misdemeanors are Class C. So if it's a Class B or a felony, you know that there's potential for jail time. But there does need to be intent and so on and so forth, but if somebody clearly knows that something's been ordered to be non-disclosed and they disclose it, they've committed a crime under 411.085. And it could be a problem if somebody in the future says, hold on, I should have had this non-disclosed. You as the court didn't do it, and now I didn't get a job, I didn't get into the college, I couldn't serve in the Marines, or whatever. So go ahead and send it in. There's no penalty for sending something in that might be questionable. There's potentially a crime if it's not dealt with. Okay, action required by the court. Upon conviction of a child convicted for a fine-only misdemeanor that's not CHINS, the court should immediately issue that order prohibiting the disclosure of criminal history record information, and then within 15 days, the order must be sent to DPS. So it should be issued immediately on conviction, and then within 15 days, it should be sent to DPS. DPS is asked that it be sent by fax or email. Those numbers and email addresses are in your materials. So you send it within 15 days, sent to DPS, and the numbers are here in your slides and also in that letter from DPS. There's the fax number and the email address. You send it there. Now, here's the good part. Dissemination is not the court's responsibility. Unlike expunction, where you have to send it out to everyone, DPS has the job of disseminating it. Unlike expunctions, the obligation is not of the clerk. DPS has to send it out to any of the affected agencies. Now, But here lies the largest problem. Today is our last regional program for judges and clerks. At every single program this year, we've taught this class. So we've taught it with 1,400 judges, probably a similar number of clerks, plus prosecutors, court administrators. We've talked to everybody throughout the state about this. All year long, in those thousands and thousands of people representing the entire state, we have heard of not one example of any person who has received an order of non-disclosure coming back from DPS yet. So no matter the noble intent behind this, as far as we know, DPS hasn't sent out one order of non-disclosure yet. So unfortunately, other than the courts, the child is not receiving this benefit yet, which is kind of sad. But DPS doesn't have an enviable job of getting all of these and sending them out, but it is their job. But you can see why it doesn't make a lot of sense. It's kind of like if you were to go grocery shopping, but instead of walking next door, you called your order into New York and waited for them to come. It doesn't make sense to involve DPS in this process at all, and they might be removed from the process in the future. In a lot of your courts, you probably can walk down the hall to the police department or to the prosecutors. It doesn't make sense to give them notice of the non-disclosure that you have to send it to DPS and have them mail it back to them. So they could be handled more efficiently if everything was kept locally. But as of right now, send it to DPS. It's their job. And we hope that they start cranking them out. It hasn't happened yet. Could be. Ryan and I just co-authored an article about this for the Texas Bar Association, and we offered some suggestions. One of them would be to eliminate DPS. One of them, we'll talk about some of the other problems we'll get to, but we made a few suggestions. Okay, so DPS disseminates the orders to all the entities within 30 days. So there should be a max 45-day timeline here, and it hasn't happened yet in the last 13 months. So DPS must send a copy of the order back to the originating court. So it's a little curious that the court issues an order and then they're served with a copy of their own order after coming back from DPS. But I think most courts believe that once that order is issued, it's a valid order. And the court should know of its own order. So once it's been ordered non-disclosed, you all need to treat everything like it has been ordered non-disclosed and not disclose things. And we'll talk about some ways to handle that here. Unlike expunction, this doesn't require clerks to track down and destroy anything. You just have to know that it's been ordered non-disclosed and it can't be released or transmitted to anyone other than those agencies specifically provided by statute. The statute says, okay, we'll get to that. Once an order is entered by the court, certain agencies or entities are allowed to look at it. You can see that's in 411.081J. There's a list of, I think, 11 agencies. It might be 13 that can look at it. That's a much smaller list than other orders of non-disclosure, which has a list of 26 different entities. One thing that you should know, the defendant or the parents cannot authorize the release of information. This is an order of the court, and they can't trump it. So they can't call you and say, the military recruiter is going to come by to pick up records, and I'm saying that's okay, and go ahead and do it. They can't release the information. They can get the information themselves, the defendant can, and give it to whoever they want, but they can't tell the court that it's okay to do so. Yes? The defendant, well, we'll get to the defendant gets a copy of it when they get it. Other than that, they shouldn't have, I don't know why they would need to request, but they can't request for you to give it to somebody else. They don't have the power to do that. So who has access? A criminal justice agency, this is what the statute says, may disclose criminal history record information subject to the order only to other criminal justice agencies for criminal justice purposes, an agency listed in subsection J, or the person who is subject of the order. So a person subject to the order, they can get it whenever. Usually when it's issued, you give it to them right there. You can always give it to them or those people listed in J or another criminal justice agency. People who don't have access would be anybody else. You'll notice people not on the list are mom and dad and military recruiters. Those are probably the most important ones that you deal with. So that presents some interesting problems. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense that mom and dad can't have access when we require them to make an appearance with the child in court. We want to make sure they're there and they know about everything, but once they're convicted, they can't hear any information. But that's the letter of the law right now, and it makes it difficult, and you need to contemplate this for when you're taking payments for a conviction on a child. Because if you're giving out a receipt that has a lot of information on it that's been ordered non-disclosed, you are disclosing prohibited information. So you have to come up with a way, whether that be we accept all payments for juveniles in a Dropbox. That's one thing, but you just have to make sure in that interaction you're not telling that person that there's something that exists, how much they owe, what the charge was, anything like that. So if a receipt normally would have a cause number, the name of the defendant, what, how much they owe, this would have to be simple, like, you know, $100 received, cause number whatever. Does it? Well, on a receipt, you're saying? I think that, no, if you blocked it out, I think that might be, I think it, your court administrator needs, there needs to be a policy that you've contemplated in place. You just need to be aware that if your receipt normally has a lot of information that is now prohibited, you can't give that to anybody other than the defendant. Right, usually they will be. So I think that there's a way to do it. You just might need to alter the process for that payment and how you would deal with other payments. That's the smartest thing. Don't let the parent make the payment. But we know a lot of courts don't. Levada says they don't accept payments unless the juvenile is there with them. Yes? I think that's a good answer. I mean, if you get a payment, and I think that's why I've suggested it would be really easy, I think, to have a Dropbox in the lobby and say payments for convictions of juveniles. Then there's no interaction with them. They drop it in there. They have to have the cause number. Then you apply it, have a receipt, and you mail it back to the defendant. So I think that's fine. But you have to make sure that you're sending it to the defendant and not the parent. So it's problematic. And then military recruiters don't have the ability to see that either. Practical dilemma for the courts. How do you answer a request for information or requests? Can you comply with an order of non-disclosure if somebody comes up to you and you tell them, if they say, I need to get information about Johnny Teenager, and you say, okay, Johnny Teenager, public notice, I'm sorry, I can't give you anything. You've just kind of let the cat out of the bag, right? So you have to be really careful. You can't say, I can't give you a copy of this, of any documents. Then you're telling them that a copy of something exists, right? You have to be careful not to confirm that they exist by refusing to give them copies. At some point, you're going to think, this is ridiculous because I saw this mom and in court, and now I can't do that. But that's the way the law is for anybody else. Pardon? The best way to word it would be right here. We do not have records responsive to your request. So that doesn't confirm or deny, but you still have to be careful with that. I mean, imagine if you got a call from a military recruiter and they say, I need to get information about Johnny Teenager, and he said that he had a conviction here, I just need to hear about it. And you say, we do not have records responsive to your request. And he says, what do you mean you don't have records? He just told me you did. Are you saying that there's nothing there or that you can't tell me? We do not have records responsive to your request. I mean, you can't give any more information with that. But this was pointed out by a sharp prosecutor. Even this could be problematic. Imagine this scenario. Military recruiter calls and says, I got three kids I need to know about. I got Johnny, Billy, and Scotty. Johnny, tell me about Johnny. We do not have records responsive to your request. Okay? Tell me about Billy. We do not have records responsive to your request. Okay? Tell me about Scotty. Oh, Scotty's never been here. He doesn't have any convictions. So unless you're saying that for everything, just by using those words, you're kind of telling them that something exists. So just be careful about that. I think that makes it a lot easier. Either, I think you could even post a sign in your window that says, records for anybody that was convicted before they were 17, by law, is not allowed to be disclosed. If you are asking for records and you are not the defendant, we can't tell you anything. Something like that. Then you're dealing, because people are going to get angry if they come up and ask you and you say, I can't, feel like they're getting the runaround. It always helps to say, well, this is the law, you know, maybe cite the statute or whatever. Yes? You can give it to the defendant. Yeah. You can only give it to the defendant. If the defendant comes up and he says, I need all my information, I do, and he turns around, military recruiter, here you go, he's giving it to him, you're not. I wouldn't say anything specific because you can say, if you say, oh yeah, Billy can come in and get his conviction records, you're letting him know. But you can say, any juvenile that has a conviction that has been, it's, if it's ordered non-disclosed, they're the only ones that can get the information. I think you just said it generally. Kid can't waive an order of the court. It's not a right that they have. It's an order of the court, and they can't tell the judge that I'm going to make an exception to your order here. So it seems like it might make sense for them to be able to. But generally, any other questions? No, I think you can. I was saying, I think you need to keep it general. If you're saying a kid can come in and get it. If they ask that, if they say, well, Johnny can come in and get his speeding conviction, you can't say, yeah, Johnny, I've got his speeding conviction right here. He can come in and get it. I mean, that's different. Exactly. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Any other questions on expunction or non-disclosure? So some of the things that hopefully can change about this. One, it'll work better if DPS isn't involved. Two, it doesn't make a lot of sense to not have parents included on the list because we know we want them to know about everything, and oftentimes they're making the payments. Three, it also might be a good idea. This is not the law. I'm telling you about things that might happen in the future. It would make more sense from Ryan and I's perspective to say that somebody doesn't get their order of non-disclosure until they've fulfilled their sentence. So once they've paid their fine, then they get it. Otherwise, you could run into problems with Omnibase, third-party collection agencies. If they're sending information out there, potentially a problem. I don't think it's been really dealt with. And orders of non-disclosure only apply to criminal justice agencies. So somebody that mom or dad that knows about it can go tell the world. But at what point is a collection agency a criminal justice agency, or they an agent of the court? Things like that are really unanswered at this point. Right. Yeah, it doesn't make any sense at all. Any other questions? Thank you guys so much for your time. I know there's a lot of law in there.
Okay, so we're going to break for a few minutes. If you be back here at 11:15.
Quarter to two.
My watch is still an hour off.